RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 187 with guest Mark Manassi, recorded Thursday, November 4th, 2010. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. I'm at Dev Connections, or IT Connections, I should be saying, in Las Vegas at the Mandalay Bay with my friend Mark Manassi. And you know, there are recordings, there are conversations we recorded, conversations we shouldn't, but we keep talking to each other. And it's for me personally.
Keep making the same mistake over and over again.
Don't do the Canadian thing.
He's been an American more than he's been a Canadian.
It's absolutely true. I'm not disagreeing with you there. And we're all happier in Canada because of that.
Maybe we should do that. Stuff my IT guy says. My favorite one there is, look at this cool stuff my iPhone does. You didn't invent it, son. You just bought it. Any idiot can do that.
And this is exactly what I'm talking about, Mark. We cannot stay on a topic. It's impossible. There's just no way.
Does anyone actually listen to these things, Richard? Do you have like statistics?
You know what? All I know for sure is they download them. I don't know if they listen to them. We'll find out. But you know, sometimes we get some email. And I always have a good time talking to you.
If you are downloading this in MP3, I would point out, first of all, that if you play it backwards, then you'll screw up your computer.
You, of course, do the keynote here on the Windows side of things.
It's not an of course. I don't take it for granted. A privilege that I cherish.
And a privilege you've had for a number of years. And do it very well, I might add.
Why, thank you, sir.
Yes. Topic this time around was not what I expected at all.
I've kind of been doing what might be called the state of the operating system for the last 26 years. And I'm not kidding.
That's true.
I used to talk about DOS 2, and then I talked about OS 2 and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so now I've been talking about Windows. But we're in a little interregnum here, a little dry spell, because, you know, it's as I speak with you in the beginning of November in 2010, it's more than a year after the release of Windows 7, and we don't know anything about Windows 8 yet. Windows 8 is still in, like, the Windows Voldemort, you know, mode where, you know, it cannot be spoken of by the Microsoft guys.
Yeah.
So what do I do? Well, honestly, I'll let you know a little secret. We won't tell anybody else. But the secret is that in those years, what I can do that's fun is I do an opinion column for the magazine. It's an online thing once a month. And I try really hard. I mean, honestly, it's 650 words. Doesn't seem like it's a lot of work. I think about the friggin' thing all the time because I want to sound intelligent 12 times a year, which is about 11 times a year more than I'm normally capable of, you know? And so, we have some fun with those. And if I can make those into like short spots, then it's, you know, it gets some laughs. I get people thinking. Maybe if some people from the audience come out and say, I've been thinking that for a long time. Thank you for having said it.
And that's the ultimate reward is you're articulating almost a gestalt that's been hovering in the industry.
I wouldn't have used a word that cool. Sort of an e-gestalt.
Yeah, there you go. An e-gestalt. Okay.
Anyway, so now I'm flashing on some Robin Williams stuff about German comics. But so my first topic I knew was going to be the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
I sat down and here's what happened. So people who are listening, if you know who I am, listen. But if you don't, I'm a speaker and writer kind of guy in IT. I wasn't trained to do that, though. My formal education is a bachelor's in economics, master's in science and policy analysis and government management, and PhD work in economics. So I'm trained up, you know, in mostly economics.
You should be working in D.C.
When I left graduate school, I went to D.C. For 4 years, I was a Washington economist.
There you go.
And honest to God, Washington. And, you know, Harry Truman is reputed to have said, bring me a one-armed economist. And they said, why, Harry? And he said, so we can't say on the other hand. You know? Anyway, so I was a Washington economist for 4 years. I actually was involved in a team that built economic models that predicted U.S. economic behavior, pension behavior, from 1970 to 2055. And the reason is if the Congress makes a rule – this is in 1980 I'm doing this.
Right.
If the Congress makes a rule in 1980 about how pensions should change, we don't see the screw-up for 48 years.
Right.
And so I was really lucky as a kid out of graduate school. I mean, my God.
You fell into this amazing project.
My boss wrote – the main piece, which predicted population from now until 2055.
Right.
And somebody else did some other pieces. I got handed the Social Security model.
Wow.
I know. I got handed the
no kidding.
And like, then the Medicare model.
Give the gun kid the impossible problem.
You know, and the private pension model. I mean, given the, you know, it was fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. And I came in at the end of the Carter administration. Mm-hmm. And they'd commissioned this study because Carter was thinking about something called MUPS, Minimum Universal Pension System. They were going to pass a law. Mm-hmm. This is in 1980. That says everybody's got to have a minimum pension, private pensions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, of course, he went out. Reagan came in. And the Reagan administration said, oh, look, we have this model we already paid for. So Reagan wanted to screw around in his early days with Social Security before mm-hmm. he realized, like all American politicians, that is the third rail of American politics.
Yes.
You know, I'm talking to a Canadian. He's smirking at me, but, you know.
You Americans, you're so funny.
One day your deficits will catch up on you, Canadian boy. Even though you guys do have 90% of the fresh water available on the planet.
Yeah, shh.
Got to bank on that. Well, thank God for Montreal, for Quebec Hydro.
Yeah.
We'd have to start building power plants, and we don't know where we'd put them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they actually used our model.
Mm-hmm.
And what you can't predict the future.
No.
I mean, what you do is you say, all right, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen?
Yeah.
You know, how good could things be? So imagine you got the worst possible curve, the best possible curve, the stuff we figure in the middle, and a couple in the middle of those. You know, the best one's known as Rosie Scenario. She's everybody's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So the amazing thing was, now again, I was a little out of it at this point. I was running the scenarios. I wasn't being asked to do the analysis anymore mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. But that was fine. But I mean, I'd actually see numbers in the Washington Post.
Wow.
About the projection of Social Security.
And these were numbers that you'd built.
Bang. And they came off rosy.
No kidding.
They were all the rosy numbers. And I got an opportunity at one of these meetings to talk to these guys. I'm like, I'm sorry, can I talk? I'm the junior guy. But these numbers you're leaking to the press. We're not leaking in numbers. They're accurate to five digits to the rosy scenario.
Right.
But anyway, so as I say, I learned after 4 years that it's not honest work.
So you became a consultant instead.
I'm not a consultant, my friend. An explainer.
An explainer.
Someone who I want to infect people with how much I love IT. So that, look, if you got to have this damn job, you might as well enjoy it.
Have some fun with it.
Exactly. And it's a tremendously fun job. You've heard me talk. I say funny stuff and people are like, you know, have you ever thought about doing stand-up? I'm like, you'd have to make things up.
Yeah.
I don't have to make anything up in this business.
The real stuff's so much funnier.
That's absolutely true. Anyway, so the reason for this wind-up is, even though I haven't done it for 26 years, mm-hmm. you learn an economic way of attacking things. Like your background's what, engineering or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so because you got an engineering background, you probably attack problems with models and math and stuff like that, which is similar to what economists do. Well, I've had this little bird ringing in the back of my head for the last two and some years that just said, this is a bad idea. It's a bad idea. But I think, yeah, look, you're old, Manasseh. You're 52 years old at the time.
What do you know?
What's that?
It's like, what do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You're doing this too long. It's a new world.
Look some more into it. You know, before you say, if you can't say something nice about it, don't say anything at all, which is what I've been doing for 2 years. But as I started doing this cloud stuff, I realized, wait a minute. It's been the economist part that's been sleeping back there, this background processing. And so I sat down and I said, well, let's just lay out the big questions. Mm-hmm. And let's attack it. And by the way, I said, let's assume I know almost nothing about cloud computing.
Right.
I mean, the one thing I do know is that it's the latest form of outsourcing. You know, we talked about that in the other talk. And so I came up with a few things. And the big thing is we're largely doing it because of cost. It all boils down to ROI.
Right.
If we're not making more money.
I don't want that front-end investment and all that infrastructure. We're going to buy it by how I use it.
Yeah, what you said. The bottom line is it doesn't matter what it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can never know what its effect is 10 years down the road.
No.
There may be horrible, deleterious effects. We can get a handle on the numbers. And that's what any intelligent analyst, I would hope, would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at a few questions. And, you know, I looked around and I found that my little cloud piece of my keynote was 65 slides. So I thought, oh, look, I have a keynote.
It's a whole keynote.
Yeah, and some more, you know. And so we've already talked about the first point. And I think it's the obvious one. The first obvious one is like, what's wrong with going to the cloud? Well, let's see. If you love the way the phone company responds when you don't have phone service, you're going to love the cloud. It's like, oh my God, I got no exchange. Press one to talk to a human. Maybe.
Maybe. You know, please hold.
You know, press one if this is urgent.
Yeah.
Press one if it's really urgent. Press one if it's after hours and you truly need to speak to a human being. Press two if you really do. Hello, how can I help you? Anyway, So the whole thing is that, you know, so there's that, right?
Yeah.
The second thing I thought about is application compatibility. Well, let's talk about this, Richard, because there's lots of different kinds of clouds. I'm not
right.
Let's not do the introduction to cloud talk. That's another day, you know.
Yeah.
But one kind of cloud is called platform as a service.
Right. This is Azure is a platform as a service.
Basically. So let's talk about what Azure is, first of all. Mm-hmm. I think I've got my hands around it. I think I understand it. And let me see. You know this stuff. Mm-hmm. I originally thought, because the Microsoft guys say, Azure is an operating system in the cloud.
Nice.
I don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah.
You know? So, because I mean, let's see. So it runs on TCP/IP. I hate to break it to you, but
so does everything else.
You know, Azure is basically the world's largest web hosting service for ASP.NET applications.
Right. Yeah.
And
if you look at the platform side of things, that's absolutely what it is.
I mean, it's interesting because I was talking to a person at Microsoft about this, and he was trying to convince me how great it was. And I said, "So let me get an idea here. So if I spin up an instance," he says, "there's no instances," and that's when the scales fall from my eyes. Oh.
Hmm.
So basically, I'm greatly simplifying. It's a monster cluster set of IIS boxes that run ASP.NET applications with slightly different APIs.
Right.
And the way we protect one customer from another is they're in different app pools.
Right.
That's basically how it's going to work. So if you believe in IIS security, and I don't mean that derisively, I mean, you know, they did a good job with IIS 6.
It's a great product.
No exploits there.
Yeah.
7, no product, no exploits, 7.5. So, so what that means is we've got to get these apps on there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing, too, that I found out is, so we're dealing with Win32. It's a Win32 platform, but it's only Win32 in user mode. If you have to run a console, you can apparently, I'm told you can run a console application in Azure.
Right.
But it's only user mode. How many apps do you have, you know, on the desktop? Let's talk about desktop apps for just
right.
a second. You know, well, you don't have to be an administrator.
No.
Yeah. And you don't have to hack the registry to make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, that's a real problem, you know.
Absolutely.
Now let's talk about server-side apps. How many of your server-side apps are ASP.NET? Well, lots.
Yeah.
But we can't move them directly over. And so the interesting question for me was, you have to take your applications, and you've got to rewrite them to put them on the cloud. That's the high-level version. How much is that going to cost? Well, I have an interesting little quote here. I want to see if I can find that. Well, anyway, I'll see if I find it in a moment. But if you think about it, why did people not go to Vista? I heard three reasons why people didn't go to Vista. First one was, can't get no drivers, runs like crap on my machine, and my apps don't run. So
right.
Vista was bad because your apps couldn't run on it. Azure is a platform where even fewer apps can run.
Mm-hmm.
Why was Vista bad and Azure's good? I'm a little slow. I went to a state school, but I'm you know, there's pieces here that are kind of missing.
Right.
And that was the first piece. Second piece was, I'm really fortunate in that I have a very varied set of clients. There's little companies, there's universities, there's research organizations, there's banks, there's, you know, that sort of thing. So there's an industry I work in I won't name, and I work in all of the large players in this industry.
Mm-hmm.
They're financially related, kind of. And one of these guys, the leader in the industry, is in the process of going to, you know, new version of Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they got to do app compat. I think they came up with 1,200 homegrown line of business applications. And so they – and the interesting, I was talking to somebody about this, and she said to me, that person should be fired. Whoever's in charge of that, why would they have all those ridiculous – applications when they use off-the-shelf stuff. I'm like, whoa, wait. There's a reason these guys are number one.
Right.
Those applications are their secret weapon.
Yeah.
That's what separates
them. This is their IP. Right. This is what makes their company distinctive and unique.
So if they're Acme Groceries and Apex Groceries is doing the same thing, why is Acme bigger than Apex? Maybe they got a better point of sale system. Maybe they're better at their customer outreach. Or something
right.
Like that. They've got applications that make them different.
Mm-hmm.
So let's put those on the cloud. You think any cloud vendor can understand this stuff? These are homegrown things? Of course not. There's nobody on the planet that can do that.
It's all about domain experience.
Exactly. So what are they going to do? Well, as I see it, there's three possibilities since it's just outsourcing. I don't know anything about clouds, but I know what happens with outsourcing. The first approach is that we could do what GM did years ago. GM, about 20 years ago, decided that they didn't want to have no IT shop because we make cars. We don't make computers.
Nice.
And so they basically buy EDS.
Yeah.
And all the guys that used to be GM IT guys with a good benefits package, a relatively relaxed work style, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all of a sudden have to become part of the EDS corporate culture. I'm not dissing EDS. They are a successful company. But let's be clear, the corporate culture on the GM side was quite different than it was on the EDS side.
Which is typical. There's always a significant dividing line between a company that does something else and needs IT and an IT company. they're different from each other. EDS was in the business of providing IT services and IT technology, and you approach technology differently than when you are an IT guy inside of a car company.
I guess my spin would be that GM had been around since the beginning of the 20th century in some bits or pieces, and there was an ethos that grew up in American companies in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. The recovering from the shock of the Great Depression, moving into the other kind of shock of World War II, and then the third shock of bringing all of these people back and injecting them into the economy and doing one of the smartest things we've ever done in this country, the GI Bill, which we completely killed, which is, that's a talk for another day. But I mean, think about this. I mean, first of all, you've got huge societal changes, massive societal changes. And there's a feeling that people have come back from seeing death. And before that, worrying about not eating. And a smart big company made you feel like you're home.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. We'll take care of you till 65. You get the gold watch, enough money to eat, and life is good. That made sense in the 30s, made sense in the 40s. I'm saddened that it doesn't make sense now, but you know, there actually are a few of those companies left, though. And now they're going to the cloud. So I think the difference is that GM was one of those companies.
Right.
And the IT guys just happened to be swept along in that culture.
Yeah, and ultimately then they outsourced them.
Yeah, and you know, and EDS wasn't built in the 20s. You know, Perot puts it together in the 70s or something along those lines. And so it's going to be a different kind of approach. Not better, not worse, just different. You know, so that's one possibility. The other possibility is you do what a large toy manufacturer did, where they said, we don't need no stinking IT. They took their huge IT infrastructure, who were in a separate building anyway. They made them a separate, wholly owned subsidiary, which means, well, now they kind of still work for the big toy company.
Right.
But
they have one customer.
But there's dreams. There are dreams that there will be other customers one day.
That's the big lie.
I mean, well, you've been a lone shark, you know.
Yeah.
Not a lone shark, you know, a freelancer, right?
Yeah.
I've been a freelancer. The worst thing to be as a freelancer is to have just
one customer.
It's the worst possible world because, you know, at least employees they have to be nice to, or there's state and provincial agencies that'll whack them for it. But if you're a contractor, forget about it.
Yeah.
With just one,
you're
gotta have multiple clients. What ended up happening then was that they tribed up, which is what we're really good at in business. You know, there was the IT people, and they could, you know, lavish new goodies on the main company people and that sort of thing. That wasn't very good. Well, the third option is to just move the stuff out to the cloud, cross your fingers, and deal with the fact you're going to have lousy service for lousy support on these 1,200 applications for the next 5 years, and you'll probably lose your strategic edge. That doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
So the kind of questions that I'm going to ask is, one of the fun things about this talk too is I realized there were eight conclusions we could come to, which we don't nearly have time for. But I think one conclusion is the cloud. I think on the one hand, the cloud doesn't work for small companies. And why? You got to have an SLA. I mean, you've probably seen this on an annual basis. Someone will do surveys of business owners and say, okay, you got a choice, Sophie's choice. You lose your phones or you lose your email.
Yeah, which one is it?
For the last 12 years, everybody said, lose the phones. We can't live without the email.
Right.
You know, so if I'm a business, I'm a 70-person business, I'm making sheet metal stuff, running a dairy or something like this, I need my email, and it goes down. Well, you know, now I'm in essentially the situation we talked about, where's your quality of service? If I'm GM, I'm out on the cloud, and you know, the mail doesn't work. I assume when I make a phone call, I make it to the president of the cloud company,
right,
and stuff happens. So if I'm a small business, what would I need? I need a really good SLA.
Yeah.
Who's going to give it to me? And if they give it to me, it's going to cost as much as having my own IT staff anyway.
Right.
Or doing what I'm probably doing now. If I'm a 35-person business, I've probably got an external consultant that's taking care of small business server for me and doing a great job. Stay with them.
Right.
So the large companies, well, their problem is if they move their line of business out to the cloud, they're either screwing their employees, which is going to affect morale and therefore productivity. Those falls, and you know what happens then, right? When you start screwing the employees in the hopes that attrition will solve your problems.
Right.
The best ones all leave, and you're just left with the dead ones.
Yes.
You know? So for large companies, I don't know if the cloud works. And for small companies, I don't know if the cloud works.
So it's a medium opportunity.
But even then, for a medium-sized company, if we think about it, and again, I'm greatly simplifying, but the whole point of the web, of the cloud, is to get economies of scale.
Right.
You take something difficult like running, well, what's the most run web-based service, or excuse me, computer-based service that you can think of?
It's web. Yeah. Websites.
Websites are definitely number one. And that's a great answer, because I would argue the cloud's been with us for a long time.
Yeah.
That's why there's been web hosting farms since 1995.
Yeah, forever.
And you know why? Because HTML is HTML. And HTTP is HTTP. And, you know, once you've figured out how to make Apache work, it's, I mean, so we've had the cloud for 15 years.
Yeah, it's true.
What's number two?
Mail.
Okay, but what server in particular does the most mail in the corporate
world? Well, it's got to be Exchange.
Right.
It's crazy how successful Exchange is for as terrifying as it is.
Yes. Whenever I install Exchange server, it makes me want to do that. Exchange it for another server. Because it's just, I mean, you need a full-time guy, at least one full-time guy. And this is where economies of scale come in, because I'm making this up, but to do a really good job running a large Exchange organization, you need two guys full time.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, if I'm a 35-person operation, I can't afford just two guys. And so, hey, if everybody in the world is using Exchange almost, well, that makes sense in the cloud. We get the economies of scale.
We already had it. There wasn't an ISP out there that wasn't selling Exchange by the mailbox.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And why? The market's not stupid.
No.
The stuff they're trying to force down our throats, that's stupid. And look, you know, not really, seriously. I mean, remember what they call clouds at ground level?
Fog.
People say clouds have a silver lining. I was a private pilot for a while. I fly through a lot of clouds.
Yeah.
There's no silver in there.
They're not there.
No, it's just water.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
sometimes it's bumpy water.
A cumulus cloud that's about 1 mile by 1 mile by 1 mile contains 22 billion gallons of water. That's a lot of water. Mm-hmm. There could be a silvery look to water sometimes. But if you think you're going to find gold by going to the clouds,
yeah,
you wouldn't even get silver. maybe water is just fool's silver. But anyway, so to simplify, small businesses are going to be screwed in terms of quality of service.
Mm-hmm.
Large businesses, depend on their line of business apps, there's no way that you can centralize it because nobody else uses it.
Right.
Medium-sized businesses, they're possible. And then what are the big applications? It's going to be web hosting, Exchange, and Office.
Mm-hmm.
Those things make sense, but as you pointed out, we were already doing that.
Yeah.
As time goes on, there will be changes. I mean, as time goes on, maybe Active Directory is that next thing. Certainly, I hear rumors that Microsoft is working on AD in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is really about addressing the identity problem. I'm going to push part of my business up into a set of servers that I don't control directly. How do I manage my identities?
And how much time do we have?
Some.
Okay. Let me make one more point that's really important. You tell me you're going to save money on the cloud. Well,
right.
That's interesting. There's a lot of things I have to say about that. But let me just throw out one.
Okay.
So let's see. Right now, you've got your users that are sitting in your building, you know, your Acme, and maybe 12 stories tall. You got the servers down in the basement and that sort of thing. And when you're running your applications, they're server-based applications, the chances are those servers are in the basement 12 floors away.
Right.
How good's the bandwidth from those clients down to the servers?
Pretty darn good. It's just
we're
a wire.
Billions of bits per second.
Yeah, right.
Oh, but you're going to take those server apps and move them out to the cloud now, aren't you? You're going to move the people out to the cloud? Wouldn't that be sweet? But you can't.
Right.
You can't move their workstations out to the cloud. Oh. So now we've got those server-based apps. Let's assume that you have the Bill Gates, Nathan Myhrvold, Steve Jobs, Wozniak, Donald Knuth, and whoever else running the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, their servers are far away. How fast is your bandwidth right now? If you're a big company, maybe T3 essentially.
Right.
Shared among your hundreds of employees. So now you're hundreds of employees, which are used to instantaneous response time. Oh, I guess you're going to be investing in some big internet bandwidth now, aren't you?
Turn the pipes up.
Oh, so we're going to save money because, let's see, we're not only paying for the cloud vendor's infrastructure, we have to buy more infrastructure for us too.
On the other end.
Hmm.
Well, and we already have reliability issues around all of that. It was one of the big conversations we had in the early days of SLAs for cloud. It's like, hey, we can't give you 5 nines because the internet's not 5 nines. There's no way if the pipe goes down, you can consider that server downtime.
Exactly. And Microsoft's thinking along those lines. My understanding is that the latest version of Exchange lets you do this weird ADFS thing where you've got some of your people out on the cloud at Exchange mailboxes, the people you don't care about. And then there's the ones that you do care about, and they're on your internal server, and you ADFS between the two of them. So I guess there's a certain amount of caching ability. It's all very foggy.
Right. Are you making cloud references here, I think?
I can't. I can't stop myself. I just can't help myself.
But, people are using this, and they're being successful with it.
Unless we're talking about medium-sized businesses hosting Exchange and Office in the cloud, again, web farms, there's nothing really new there.
Right.
Exchange hosting, nothing really new there. Where else are we really seeing
this? The scenarios that I've had an opportunity to speak to have been the short term. I've got a 3-month promotion. I want to light up a bunch of gear to run for that promotion, and then I'm going to shut it back down again.
Hmm. So we're talking about fairly simple web-based applications.
Generally speaking, yeah.
So it's a web farm.
More or less. In theory.
That's a pricing model.
It's a pricing model issue.
That's not a computing model. It's a pricing model.
I should have been able to buy this from an ISP 10 years ago.
I'll bet you can.
Yeah. You might well have.
ISPs have the same problem that like Amazon has with their EC2 and S3 web hosting services. Mm-hmm. Just for chuckles, I thought when I was doing my research, let me see how much it's going to cost to put something up in the Amazon cloud.
Mm-hmm. They've got a very cool computer if you can answer some fairly detailed questions about your app.
Yes. The kind of things that they do are kind of interesting. I'm looking at that page now. Mm-hmm. Give me a second to just pull it up here, Richard. So this is the Amazon Elastic Cloud EC2 thing.
Yeah.
It wants to know, first thing, how many Elastic IPs I need. Elastic IPs?
That's cool.
I had no idea they were Elastic. The thing is, though, most Elastic things involve petroleum-based products. Are we making the oil shortage even worse by adapting Elastic IPs? Let's see. There's the Amazon EC2 bandwidth. So data transfer and data transfer out. I got that. Regional data transfer. All right, I get that. Public IP / Elastic data transfer. And then there's number of Elastic LBs. And then data processed by all LBs. And then
I don't know how you answer these questions.
And then I thought I would look at Azure. And there is an Azure cost calculator.
Oh, cool.
Yes. You can go to Microsoft.com/Azure, and they'll take you to a cost calculator. And it takes you to this page. It's roianalyst.alien, LINEN.com/MSFT, whatever. And what happens is this little thing spun around, and it spun around for about 40 minutes, and then I gave up, and I let it run overnight. The interesting thing is this Azure analysis thing is run on these guys, Alien. I don't know who they are, but they're not Microsoft. Why didn't they host us on Azure? Do you think maybe it was going to cost too much to host it on Azure? And along those lines also, we're talking about cost. Let's consider another thought.
Mm-hmm.
So we get into Azure. And look, I don't mean to beat on Microsoft. Everybody who's doing this platform as a service, it's the same shtick.
Right.
Okay? So let me get this straight. I had to hire coders and rewrite my code somewhat. There's no automatic conversion tools up to Azure. Let's say I don't like Azure. Oh, that's right. Now I've got to hire guys to rewrite the new code back to local Win32 and ASP.NET. That's some cost. And the scariest one to me is, so Microsoft calls it an operating system in a cloud, the fabric and that sort of thing.
Right.
But what happens when they decide that Fabric 1.1 has some serious issues? Because they've thought about it for a while. They've collected all your money, and thank you for being a beta tester that pays them. Mm-hmm. And they're going to Fabric 2.0 because it's so much more secure and it's faster and yada, 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 whatever, you know. And by the way, when they talk about Agile, I don't know of any clouds that automatically grow as you need them.
No automated elasticity.
You have to get there on the web and say, oh, I think things are busy now.
Yeah.
You know? So you need a monkey, you know, somewhere on the web watching this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so where was I? I've lost it.
We went after.
Operating system upgrade. What happens when they say 1.1's going off in 45 days? And the funny thing is, the first time I said that out loud was the same about a week and a half ago. Was the day that Microsoft said, "Oh, by the way, we're turning BPOS off or whatever it was, or Office Online."
Oh yeah, Office Live was going away for Office 360.
Right. So, you know, what happens if we've already spent a lot of money? Maybe it was a lot of pain and suffering to get stuff onto Fabric 1.0. They're going to go to 2.0 and shutting off 1.0. You know, Microsoft's done this in the past. Everybody does. They want you to upgrade on a regular basis.
Right.
Now you got no choice.
Well, yeah, because you have no – this all comes back to the basic issue of the alternate provider. We don't have alternate providers. Everybody's a unique offering. It's the side effect of being new. And there's supposedly a group of folks that are trying to build a set of common rules.
Open source?
Well, because sort of set of common rules, it's just there's really no incentive to do it.
Not at all.
No,
but once it becomes commodity, then
then we're just competing on price.
Something Microsoft will be out of business.
Yeah, you know? They don't actually want the compatibility. They want the product lock in.
No, absolutely. And so you know, once you're at a vendor and once you're trapped there, it's the worst of all possible worlds.
Yeah.
At least we could buy new boxes now and decide to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft has recently said, they first said that you would not be able to build a private Azure cloud.
Right.
Now they're saying there's going to be an Azure appliance.
Right.
And I guess the way that works is you buy the hardware, you put the software on there, and you still write Microsoft a check every month. No,
it's not like it's server. It's a container load of gear.
Oh, yeah.
It's huge.
Yes.
This is not something that, you know, the individual is going to have.
Well, that'll that'll change, you know. No time at all, you'll be able to, you know, mimic it on your iPhone or something.
Well,
like
I'm just hoping that as they go down that path, that we might get a couple of the big ISPs able to host something Azure-like so that we do actually have an alternative site to go to. I don't know that it's going to happen, but once they started talking
about
that,
how's the licensing going to work in that? Microsoft's going to want money from the ISP probably, yeah, you know, to host that sort of thing.
Right. So it's, well, we get in that same situation we have with the broadband providers, where there's only one set of wires going to the house, and I've got three companies will sell me DSL, but in the end, it's the same phone company that's actually providing the wire.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter who I pay; they always get paid.
Well, it'd be interesting if we ever get that Google thing, where the notion is we're all going to be wireless and we'll just sort of shunt each other's traffic around.
Yes, just float around.
Yeah, it actually works in Africa. It's pretty cool. They've got this thing whereby you'll have a group of people in an area,
mm-hmm,
and they'll have their WAPs set up to forward to each other. And so they don't have any wires because it would cost too much money to run the infrastructure.
Right.
And so they're sort of creating sort of inexpensive
mesh.
Wide area
network.
High speed.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some interesting technology going on there, but that's a whole other show.
That is. It is indeed.
So in conclusion, you love the cloud and you're moving everything to it.
Oh, you betcha. Just as soon as I can. I mean, it seems to me that there will be a let me toss in one thing, that because this is the number one question I always get is, okay, you're not happy about the cloud. I said, I'm not happy about it. I just want you to think about, I want you to ask those questions. What will it cost to get in? What will it cost to get out? What control do I have about upgrades and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. Ask those questions. Ask yourself right now. And by the way, one more thing. The cloud guys are going to come in and they're going to talk about their 5.9s or their 6.9s or that sort of thing. How many 9s have you got?
Right.
How many of our listeners are here saying, can you tell me what your uptime is?
Right.
You're currently providing exchange service. You're not providing 100%. No one provides 100%. If you do, open the cloud vendor, please.
Right.
You know, so know those numbers, because you know what? The cloud guys would be happy to estimate them for you.
Right.
There'll be a little bit of, you know, numerological proctology going on there. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, you can't fight the cloud if you don't know how good you're doing.
Right.
People talk about private clouds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and say, well, does that make sense? You know, ultimately, the reason we have PCs in the first place, honestly, is I remember in the early 80s, micros had been around for 10 years, but they started to break through when an IBM compatible could be a decent word processor or could run Excel.
Right.
I made a fair amount of money. Here's a little pericope about this. I made a fair amount of money in the early 80s building tools for people where I would go to their PDPs or their IBMs, mainframes, suck down data into VisiCalc or 123. Then they could build a little macro that would do some calculation. I'm like, why am I doing this? Well, you're pulling this data down. The macro is going to take about 24 hours to run. It's going to give a report to us. Okay. A little slow. Went to a state school. Why don't you have the mainframe guys do it? Well, in 1983, if you went to the average COBOL shop and said, I need to change this report, the average turnaround time was 2.5 years.
Right.
They were not responding to their people, and that's the reason why micros got in the first place.
Yeah.
It's just happening to us now. Because in the same sense that, like, the great thing about a private cloud is, if I'm the decision maker, I'm the technocrat, but I'm not on the IT staff, and I say I need a machine, if I've got to wait 3 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 months to get a server from these guys, I mean, quite honestly, we talk about how we don't want to lose our jobs to the cloud, but, you know, I'm at some organizations where the IT staff views the user community with open contempt.
Yeah.
Those people will be blown away to the cloud.
Sure. Because these guys can get an EC2 instance or an Azure instance provision that afternoon and have something up and running. It'll have all kinds of problems, but they got something other than we'll get back to you in 3 months.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, if you want to not lose your job to the cloud,
serve your customers.
Make sure you have some solid numbers and provide service that you would want.
Back when I did real work, and it's been a while, you know, that was the whole attitude, was these users are our customers. We have nothing if we're not doing that. We don't make money for this organization.
You Canadians are so cute.
We're such an expense, right? But
no, you're right. Well-run companies are like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And when you do your job well, you make everybody else more productive, right?
And one of the things we've done wrong for ages is that so many IT people don't see themselves as part of the company.
Yeah.
They see themselves as IT people. Here's a story. I was at a conference, and this is 3-4 years ago, and there was a guy speaking before me, and he was a IT director at some big company. He made a joke to these other IT directors, like, you know, look, we don't know what our companies do. We don't even have to. We're just IT guys. You know? He was the IT director of AIG. Had I known?
Unbelievable. Hey, Mark, always fun to talk to you.
And you too, pal. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no worries. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.